Welcome to Conscious Corner with Vanity. My name is Vanity Reed Dieterville. I'm a native of Charleston, South Carolina, a junior political science student at the College of Charleston, the lead podcast intern here at the Office of Sustainability, and a transgender woman of color who's forced to take a critical look at the intersections of her everyday involvement. I'm here to bring awareness to you about personal, social, economic, political, and environmental initiatives at the College of Charleston, which are more commonly referred to as the five pillars of sustainability. And I hope to highlight these initiatives for you through the sound of my voice. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Conscious Corner. This is your host, Vanity, and today we're discussing the concept of art for social change. The goal is to highlight works of artists and discuss how it connects social change, social justice, or progressivism to the realm of sustainability. I have the pleasure of speaking with an individual who also works at the College of Charleston Office of Sustainability, and I'll allow them to introduce themselves along with their pronouns and what they do.
Hey, my name is Kamala Guevara. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the media manager at the Office of Sustainability.
How long have you been the media manager?
Since October.
Okay. And how are you liking it?
I like it. It's new challenges every day, and getting to work with students like you is really inspiring, and it's exciting for me. So learning a lot.
All right. Well, we won't waste any time. We'll jump right in. First question being, when did your artwork begin specifically, and what was the major inspiration?
So I've always been an artist, always felt like an artist. Art for me is a place where I've always felt confident about my abilities, even when I wasn't outwardly confident. And I think also being like an awkward brown girl in South Carolina is just like, know how to keep to myself.
Yeah. Entertain myself. Kind of get socialized that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you ever incorporate any pain from within your life or any trauma into your artwork? And if not pain, then what emotions would you say are the most evident through your artistry?
Well, my work centers around undervalued labor, meaning like labor in the home or even like emotional labor that we perform for our friends and family. With the metaphor of fiber art, so sewing, embroidery, these kinds of tasks that fall into women's work that are, you know, that is generally undervalued.
Typically seen as the domesticated work.
Right. So I use art to find peace. Sewing and embroidery is very meditative, as well as weaving. And I like the traditions of these, of fiber art, like weaving. And I find a lot of comfort in that. And also, like, it allows me to get out of my head and kind of focus on a task or on a skill that I can learn that's useful.
Question of clarity for myself. How different is weaving from crocheting?
So weaving is more grid-based.
Okay.
So, you know, just like denim, any fabric that's not like super stretchy is woven. So like your jeans would be woven, your shirt would be a knit. So crocheting is more like a knit. It's like a looped kind of interlocking stitch. So crochet is like a... crocheting and knitting like are more closely related to like than like sewing or weaving, because weaving is creating the cloth, and then sewing is like cutting and making something.
Got it.
Whereas a lot of times with crochet and knitting, you're creating a garment like with one strand.
Right, and I had a great grandmother that knew how to crochet some. She would do like little stockings and blankets and pocket squares and stuff like that when she could.
I love that.
But I never learned, never really took the time to learn, but I did appreciate that she knew how to do it. I thought it was cool.
Those are my people. Everyone's grandmother.
So undervalued labor, very interesting concept. And so you talked a little bit about the method of your art, but could you expound more on the mediums that you used? And how those are linked to transformative learning, or how those are necessary to shift the paradigm for social change?
Well, cutting and sewing like quilts and garments, to me, that's such an empowering skill to learn because I'm not beholden to current fashion or like sample sizes. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to find things that are outside of like a very narrow mm-hmm. view of, you know, sizes.
Yes.
So I think cutting and sewing clothing to me is just the funnest thing I could do. Also embroidery. In my work, I like to activate found objects with embroidery.
Okay.
So even things that you wouldn't think to embroider, like I like taking car screens, like the kind that reflect sunlight, and embroidering on those, like thinking of basically anything as a
canvas. Oh, you mean the kinds that like block when you get out of the car and you put in your windshield. Okay.
Right. So like finding these objects and creating my own canvases. I'm
okay.
interested in things that are outside of the square. I also like the taking kind of silly objects and turning them into more like art, stretchers, like pool noodles. So covering those with canvas, like taking something sort of absurd and silly and using like more art traditional mediums or like traditional materials like canvas and then it becoming an art object.
Okay. So working with strange items to make them pop artistically, what would you say has been your strangest piece of work to date, and what did you transform that into?
I have a lot of these embroidered sparkle sponges, and the sparkle sponge to me is like a really...
With like the green like scrub part on the top?
Yeah, so I actually found some that have like iridescent threads like knitted into it.
Okay.
So, you know, it's abrasive and you can still use a sponge, but it's this like ultra feminized, like jazzy household object, I guess, which I find a little bit tragic because it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's work that needs to be done, like dishes, like mm-hmm. that we need to do to be able to do any of our other work, you know, mm-hmm. feed ourselves, but it's like make it like jazzy and cute for women so mm-hmm. they're more excited about doing it maybe or something. But taking this object out of its normal use and incorporating embroidery, so going back to that undervalued labor, like
yeah.
hand sewing, and just like yeah putting it in a gallery on a wall like with a grouping of them, I think that was very exciting for me.
Very cool. I have an obligation in Charlotte in a few weeks, and part of me wanted to just, you know, buy a gown because I've never really worn a fancy gown before.
Mm-hmm.
Even in my transition, it's kind of something that I felt self-conscious about. Mm-hmm. I usually just do like a skirt or pair it with a top, but when it came to like my body shape, I'm still like getting comfortable with it, so a gown kind of terrifies me.
Yeah.
So I am actually letting a friend of mine who's a designer make me something.
Oh my gosh.
Which I feel like is probably the more sustainable route.
For sure.
And we're going fabric shopping today to go look at some fabric so he can create whatever masterpiece he wants to. So I'm both excited and extremely terrified at the thought. But I'm going to jump into it, and it'll be my first gown that I've ever worn.
Oh my gosh, that's so special. That's yeah. so much cooler, too, than just going to, like, Belk and,
it
like,
is.
Picking,
it
picking
is.
Out
Cause
something. Because
then it can be customized, and
yeah.
then he can tailor it for me.
Right. That's key, because
yeah.
even if you do find something on the rack, like, the odds of it, like, fitting perfectly, it just
Very
doesn't
slim.
Happen. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very slim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big girl, so I gotta work with what I got.
Oh, it's so exciting. Oh, I can't wait to see that.
I'll give you pictures.
Okay, great.
All right. So, throughout all of your artistry, what would you say your main point of growth within your artwork has been thus far?
Last year was the artist in, or the year before last, I was the artist in residence for the City of North Charleston. And that was really cool because I grew up in North Charleston. And I feel really lucky to, for all of my, like elementary, middle school, and high school education in South Carolina, I've had art every single year, which I don't think is typical.
No.
And I am really grateful for having had so many amazing teachers who, you know, invested time and materials into me exploring making artwork and feeling like even building more of that confidence that I felt with art. And so being the artist in residence was awesome because I was able to share fiber art with a lot of different communities, like young kids as young as first grade. I did embroidery with them, which I learned is a little too young, but it was fun. They were very enthusiastic and they did it. Honestly, it was just like, it was a lot of children, a lot of work, but it was cool. We made a community quilt, but also getting to go to like retirement homes and share embroidery, origami. We made a lot of pot holders, those kind of woven ones. That was really transformative because it, I just got a lot more comfortable like talking about my work with all kinds of people and finding the things about it that are exciting and that engage other people into what it is I'm doing.
Definitely. Yeah. I can, speaking to the note of having art every year of primary and secondary school, I think the only period of time where I had an art teacher every year might have been elementary school. So in middle school, I think that's when things started to become an option.
Right.
And I don't think art was something that was an every year. Luckily, in high school, it was a requirement to take it at least, I think, once or twice throughout your 4 years in high school. But it would be interesting to see how having that every year of primary and secondary school could influence the way students think before they graduate.
Yeah. Also, I think in middle school and even like late elementary school is when people start to disengage with art because they don't, they're like, oh, I'm not good at this, which really breaks my heart because I feel like we judge that based on like drawing and painting and things like that, like making representational artwork. And to me, like that's like irrelevant, you know, like there's just so many more things you can do, but we can be a little limited by like about, we can already create these stories about like, I'm not an artist. And then it totally shuts people down from like a super young age, which is like so sad.
I witnessed that along with my family, you know, wanting to do vocal arts for a while. I sang for many years in the choir and from chorus to choir to eventually a glee club for like a year or two, which was insane. So I've completely forgotten how to read sheet music. So that's gone. But
I thought it would come back.
Holding a tone is still possible. But I always remember when it came to vocal artists, that competition was very like very oppositional. You know, you would have parents, sometimes your own parents. I remember one time my dad, you know, told me, just like, it was for a contest that I was entering in, and he was just like, well, I don't think you'll raise as much as she raises because, you know, she's got a voice on her and you can't touch that. And I'm just like, that may be true, but try not to discourage so much, you know? It still really counts. And this is middle school. You know, it's already a very awkward age in your developmental years. Puberty starts to set in and things change with your body and your mind. And so, you know, those kinds of things get said to students sometimes by their parents, and their foresight of making it with that, making it with art, you know, suddenly this thought of that's completely unrealistic. Leave it alone.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah, it doesn't have, I feel like the competitive nature of that comes from this like scarcity type of thing where it's like only so many people can have that opportunity. But I think if we approached it more with abundance about like, you know, these kinds of like art forms giving people peace and not having to be like monetized or, you know, like it just creates more space for like that internal change, I feel like. I don't know. Art and commerce is, it gets so weird.
So you talked about what your growth has been thus far. Is there anything that you want to continue to grow on? One key aspect within your work that you would like to really propel into the next level?
Well, I've been painting too, and
Didn't know that you paint.
I do paint. I've been using gouache, which is like an opaque watercolor. It has like a really matte quality to it. It used to be used in advertising, so I use that as sort of a counterpoint to fiber art, where fiber art uses a lot of planning and materials. I think painting is so fun because I can just create something in like an hour and still kind of access that like peaceful place. So that's something I've been wanting to get back to. And I think that would be really fun. I've also been kind of like not hoarding, but saving koozies, like drink koozies.
That's funny.
Yeah, so you know how people are always giving those away.
Yes.
And I think the material, it's kind of like this mouse pad.
Yes.
It's kind of, it's spongy and it's a useful material, but just that it's always like an object that, no one needs any more of them.
It's like we only design it for one thing.
Yeah, they're a weird thing. But I like all of the variety of colors and like printed things on them. So I've been saving them, and I recently have been making quilts out of them. Like, so cutting them up and then like stitching them together to make like larger pieces of fabric.
I bet that feels amazing.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying to stitch through. And so also thinking about like, continuing to put those all together with this sort of seemingly renewable material.
Yeah.
So that's something I've been wanting to continue playing with.
Very cool.
I like using obtaining the material as almost part of my process.
Okay.
So another project that I was working on is these shaker lids from restaurants. Like, they call them dredge lids, like, you put spices in it, and they come in a lot of different, the holes have different, widths, and embroidering those, and...
Oh.
Again, taking kind of an object and activating it with embroidery.
Okay.
Continuing to take materials and push them outside of their, intended purpose.
Yeah. As satisfying as I'm imagining the sounds of this, because... You said it was satisfying to stitch through that material of the koozies. That could probably do very well as an ASMR.
I wonder. Yeah, it's on the sewing machine, so I guess there is like a little bit of a purr. That's the whole sound aspect I have not even explored. It's not on my radar, but I'm open.
Okay.
I'm open to
that. All right. Well, we'll take a note of that, and we'll probably circle back to the audio of the artwork, and we'll see where we can go with that one. So tell me more about how you feel your artistry connects to the realm of sustainability. And within the pillars, is there a specific pillar of sustainability that your art exemplifies?
I would say the first one is personal sustainability, because I'm sure a lot of artists say this, but it's cheap therapy, like accessing or just like having moments of peace, and also like not really having to consult with other people. Like I, get to make decisions and explore in my studio kind of like a scientist or something. Like I'm creating something not to sell something to other people, and that's like, to me, like really exciting. I think it allows me to show up as my full self, like having that expression. And then I guess social sustainability, I like using my graphic design and donating art to organizations that I think are doing really good work. I do a lot with Carolina Youth Action Project. I'm on the board I'm on the board there, and always donating artwork. I'm working on a banner for them for the summer camp.
Okay.
Like a new one, and I'm
Which is coming up.
That. Yeah, summer camp starts July 12th or 15th.
Okay, shameless plug.
Yeah, and then the showcase will be a really cool way for people to get involved with that, which is the 21st.
Okay.
Saturday, July 21st, at Palmetto Scholars Academy.
Okay, cool. Where is that?
It's on Dorchester Road.
Okay, all right. I'll be sure to look that up. And to plug you all in with the information so you can support Carolina Youth Action Project, which is an amazing organization. I had the opportunity, I believe it was 2 years, to experience the Girls Rock Camp at the Music Hall.
Yeah.
And so that was a really interesting experience. And I knew some people who had some children there. So it was really cool to get to see them up on stage.
Yeah. Such a fun experience.
Well, that's it on my end with questions. Do you have anything else or any plugs that you'd like to give to the audience or where they can follow you?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram. It's at Camila Guevara, and that's where I share my fiber art, embroidery. I teach embroidery, so get in contact. I'd be happy to do private lessons or groups or like baby showers. I share my handmade clothing on Instagram under Daytime Sequins, and that's really fun to connect with the sewing community. And
y'all are learning a lot that I'm learning, because I don't think I knew some of these things, so I'll be checking it out. Well, thank you, Kamala, for tuning in. Thank all of you for listening for this episode of Conscious Corner with Vanity, and I'll be sure to see you next time. Synergies is a digital platform produced by the Office of Sustainability at the College of Charleston to educate, inspire, and mobilize students, staff, and the greater community to embody sustainability in their work and their lives. We intend Synergies to be a community resource with articles, essays, artwork, podcasts, and DIY projects connected with creating a thriving earth for all.